Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate studio, 7th floor of the Trip Tower, here till 5 a.m., as we are every weekday morning, 2 a.m. to 5 a.m. I'm your overnight dude. It is Triple Play Thursday, so get your requests in right now. Text them in at 312-981-7200. One artist, three songs, and once again, the listeners program the music bumps coming back from breaks and stuff like that. A little bit later in the show, that'll start. Triple Play Thursday, get them in now, 312-981-7200. All right. Always a pleasure to welcome back to the show one of my favorite guests, Dan Feinberg. He's a TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter, and you can follow him on Facebook and Twitter at The Fine Print. That's F-I-E-N, The Fine Print. We're going to talk about some of the stuff that he has reviewed recently in Hollywood Reporter. We're going to talk about TV. And we've got some questions that you texted in. And anytime you want to text in some generic questions for TV questions for Dan, please do anytime, and we read them back when we have Dan on. Don't necessarily have time to take all the phone calls, but we do want your questions, so you can text those in anytime you want. 312-981-7200. Let's welcome Dan Feinberg to the show. Dan, how are you?
I am keeping busy, Nick. How about you?
I'm okay. So I understand that you are heading to the ATX Television Festival is that in Austin?
That is in Austin, and I will be departing in just a few hours. And this is my second ATX Television Festival. I believe this is the sixth one overall that they have done. And it's really just a great, fun event that they do each summer. So it's in June in Austin, which means very, very warm. But it also is just a great get-together of people who genuinely and passionately and obsessively love TV, and it's a great gathering, and I loved it the first time I went last year, not just because of Steve Brisket and Queso, but, looking forward to it this year.
Well, great. Now, what panels? I see that you're going to be doing some panels. You'll be on a panel, and then you'll be moderating another one, correct?
Yeah, I'm going to be sitting on one panel about the general business of TV criticism. I'm going to be sitting on that with my Hollywood Reporter colleague Kim Goodman, my former HitFix colleague Alan Sepinwall, my buddies Todd Vanderwerf and Libby Hill from Fox and the LA Times. And so, yeah, it's going to be a good chat about people who spend much too much time watching TV for a living, talking to people who spend much too much time watching TV on an amateur basis. So that is always fun. I did that last year. And then I'm going to be moderating panels for Starz's Survivor's Remorse, which I love, for CBS's Life in Pieces, which I have lots of stuff to talk about, for two pilots that didn't get picked up, starring Abigail Spencer from Rectify and an upcoming NBC drama. And she's one of sort of the key figures of the ATX Television Festival. I think she's on the board and whatnot, so that should be fun. And then I'm doing a panel on the last day with a bunch of comedy showrunners talking about the idea of escapism and comedy, so sort of a big picture. I think we just all have to figure out what escapism means and what it has to do with anything. I think that's going to be my first question is, what the heck does escapism mean and what is the topic of this panel? But looking forward to it.
That's great. That's great. Now, can people get online and check this stuff out? Are they going to stream these panels or anything like that?
Things don't stream live, but unlike some festivals, unlike, say, for example, Comic-Con, panels do go up. Almost all of them, I think, and most of them go up fairly quickly in the days or weeks after the festival. So it won't be streaming live, but within a week or two, you'll be able to see almost everything that happens at ATX, which is a really nice thing that they do. They document this festival very, very well. And I think that's an incredibly important thing that they do, given the number of just super panels and panelists they have. So they have, you know, a conversation with Jared Carmichael and Norman Lear, and that's the kind of thing that you just want to have forever on record.
Absolutely.
This conversation with Tom Fontana and David Simon. I mean, you just want to have that for posterity. There are dozens of these panels, and I think this is just a great service they do above and beyond the great service of actually just putting together a good four-day festival.
Yeah. Okay. Well, have fun, man. It sounds like it's going to be a blast.
It should be. I am looking forward to the panels I'm doing. They've got good people on them, and I am really looking forward to some Shiner and queso and some ribs and brisket.
Yeah. Okay. Very cool. Very, very cool. Okay. I want to mention that, you know, you've talked about the OJ Made in America on this show before. People are finally going to get a chance to see it. This Saturday night on ABC, it will air the first episode. Then the subsequent episodes will air starting Tuesday on ESPN as the 30 for 30 show. Again, remind everyone, for those people who didn't hear, OJ Made in America, you have gone kind of nuts over this. And I'm telling you, and by the way, I see your quotes on all the promos for it.
Oh, okay. See, I actually haven't. That's fantastic, because the first trailer came out and I didn't have a quote in it, and I was almost pissed off. I was like, I love this so much. I actually want to be blurbed for this, you know. And that happens so rarely that I'm like, please use my words, use my effusiveness.
Well, I did see it. You know how when you log on to like IMDb or whatever, and you know the ad that pops up as the background ad.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you were quoted all over that.
Ooh, excellent. Well, yeah, that is good to hear. No, we've been talking about this since January when I first saw it.
Oh, yeah.
It was when it premiered at the Sundance Film Festival. And this was at the time when everybody was going nuts for FX's People vs. O.J. Simpson. And I kept saying to you and anyone else who would listen, this FX thing is really good, but wait till you get a load of the 30 for 30 doc that's coming.
Yeah.
And I'm so excited that people are going to get the chance to now, because it's just special. It's just a thing of such depth and nuance and texture, while also being this fantastic story that has literally everything that you could possibly want in high quality drama. You know, it has murder, it has stupid jail sentences for memorabilia, it has sports heroism, it has Peter Hyams talking about Capricorn One. I mean, there is just nothing that you could want that it doesn't have. And you know, even if you feel like you got everything that you needed out of People versus OJ, the trial is, you know, it's 3 hours. It's 2.5 hours out of a 7.5 or 10 hour, depending on if you're watching it with or without commercials, documentary. The miniseries didn't get to delve into OJ as a football player. It barely got to delve into OJ as sort of a symbol of race, and OJ trying to avoid being represented in the media as being an African-American hero. He wanted to be a global hero, but then suddenly the trial came along and white America moved away from him, and African-American America, tough to say, moved towards him, and suddenly he became a different figure. It's dazzlingly good.
Okay.
And I think, you know, I think people will really, really dig it, and they'll really be surprised by how new it feels, even if they already put 10 hours into the FX series.
Yeah, I can't wait to see it. I really can't. It's on my DVR, and in fact, I'm going to watch it live Saturday. That's my plan for Saturday night. I will stay in and watch.
There's little that you could do that would be better, I think.
So ABC, again, it's a little confusing. ABC on Saturday night will show the part one premiere, and then starting on Tuesday, it will be on ESPN. Subsequent nights, but Tuesday, if you miss it on ABC, they repeat the part one here at 6 o'clock, I believe. 6 o'clock, Chicago.
I believe all of the previous parts are going to air before the new installment. So I think basically there are 4 hours of this miniseries each night. Two of them new, two of them from the night before. So
right.
If you happen to miss, or if you happen to like the idea of watching it in a whopping 4 hour block, you know, however you want to do it,
it's
really worth it. It's really smart. Ezra Edelman is the filmmaker who made it. And interestingly, it's premiering after the Emmy deadline for this year. So People versus OJ is going to, of course, get all of the Emmy attention, and I assume it's going to win dozens of Emmys.
Yeah.
And this will be pushed till next year's Emmys. It's not like it's going to miss out. But what they did that was interesting is they released it in New York and Los Angeles in theaters so that it could hypothetically be nominated for Oscars.
I see.
And that's something that I find remarkable. And, you know, I don't know. There aren't going to be 10 movies this year that are better than this.
Yeah.
So we'll see what they do with that.
Okay. Well, I don't know, you know, you sold me on this 6 months ago, Dan, so
And I've now overhyped it, and everyone will be disappointed.
No, I don't think so. I mean, I've never seen such acclaim for something like this. And this filmmaker, I looked him up. All he's done are the 30 for 30 docs. He's done sports docs in the past.
He has, and you know, this is just at its best, the 30 for 30 franchise is something significant.
Yes.
And I think they have diluted it over the past couple of years, and sometimes you see something pop up on ESPN and it has the 30 for 30 banner in the corner and you go, that doesn't look right. But if you go back to the first year that this franchise premiered and how good that initial run of docs was, mm-hmm. this is a callback to that and as good as any of them, better than almost all of them. You know, it brings the luster back.
Got it. Okay. Dan, hang on, okay?
Of course.
Dan Feinberg is with us. He's a great guy, TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. Follow him on Facebook and Twitter at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. Again, we were talking about O.J., Made in America, an eight-hour documentary that premieres on ABC this Saturday night, 8 o'clock, and then subsequent nights, the rest of the show will be aired on ESPN. This is going to be special. All right, we'll take a quick break, and we'll talk more TV with Dan Feinberg after we break for the news right here on 720 WGN. Welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate studio on the seventh floor of the Trib Tower. We're going to talk about Chicagoisms and regionalisms a little bit later in the show. We all know when I say the word pop, we all know what that is. But if you're not from Chicago or maybe the Midwest, you don't know really what pop is. But that's just one of the examples. There's a little quiz that we're going to take a little bit later on about that. And then we'll get into regionalisms. We haven't talked about that in a long time, and it's always a lot of fun to do that. It's Nick DiGilio here on WGN, and we are here till 5 a.m. It is Triple Play Thursday, so get your requests in now. One artist, three songs, and so get them in there now at 312-981-7200, Triple Play Thursday. We'll kick off in a little bit. Right now, though, Dan Feinberg is with us. He is a TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter, and you can follow him on Facebook and Twitter at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N, The Fine Print, and we welcome Dan back. Dan, welcome back.
Thank you much.
Okay. Can we talk about the show that I have been most insanely disappointed in?
Uh-oh. What's it going to be?
It's Maya and Marty. I watched both episodes of it. And, Maya Rudolph, Martin Short, incredibly talented. The special guests that they've had on, enormously talented. To me, the show is a disaster. I just can't. And I watched the second episode yesterday. Thought it was even worse than the first episode.
That's bad, because I didn't like the first one, and I haven't gotten to the second because there wasn't really much inspiration to dive into it last night.
Yeah, I don't blame you. And this is, you know, so tell me what you thought of the first one, and give us your thoughts on how many episodes are they doing?
I think they're doing a summer's worth. I think it's 10 or 13. And they've been talking. I mean, they've been talking about doing a variety show for Maya Rudolph for years.
Right.
They did a special with her last summer or the summer before, a one-off, and people liked it well enough.
Yeah, I watched that. I watched that, and I liked it. I thought it was
okay.
Fun. Yeah.
See, now this whole thing is your fault. No, Maya Rudolph is so talented. It's mind-boggling how talented she is and how difficult apparently it is to harness that.
Yeah.
Because even SNL, which was designed basically for somebody with her skill set, you know, she is a versatile impressionist. She is ridiculously funny. She has a phenomenal voice.
Yep.
I mean, she could easily just be a professional singer, not worry about any of the rest of this stuff.
Yeah.
And even SNL only occasionally figured out what to do with her, and this is, it's watered down SNL and without any edge and without any relevance. And I was kind of shocked because no one knew exactly what this show was going to be when it premiered last week. You know, NBC was just being sort of coy and, oh, it's going to be a variety show, whatever. And then it ended up being basically the, you know, like you twisted the cap on an SNL episode and you let the fizz go out and then you sip on it and you go, this doesn't taste right.
Yeah.
And I think that's about it. It was all sort of half-baked sketches that probably wouldn't have made it on SNL. It might have been cut in dress rehearsal. It might have been stuck late in the night when no one would pay attention or people would fast forward. And No, not a good use of anybody's talent, including the various guest stars. And it seemed like this week's episode had more good people being wasted.
Yeah, they did. You know, she and Tina Fey did a bit about variety shows, and they sang, an old-school 70s medley and did imitations of, women from past variety shows as they were singing, and it was a very lame bit. This is just me, Dan. I don't get the Jiminy Glick thing. I've never gotten the Jiminy Glick thing, ever. And I just find, it's not funny. I didn't think the episode with Larry David was very good. The one with Drake this week, not even as funny as the one with Larry David.
So they brought back Jiminy Glick for a second episode?
Oh, I'm guessing it's going to be every week. That might.
Oh, no, why?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. No.
Yeah.
No.
Yes. Yes.
See, this is the thing, because absolutely nobody was talking about it this week at all. The first week, a couple people were talking about it. Nobody talked about it this week, so I had no idea they brought him back.
Oh, yeah. Oh. Yeah. He does a bit with Drake, and it's as unfunny as you can possibly imagine.
I occasionally can find Jiminy Glick funny. I don't, in principle, find him funny, but I kind of liked how hard Larry David was working in that first skit in the premiere to sell the bit. Kind of.
Yeah.
I didn't love it, but kind of. But no, I didn't realize that they were thinking it was going to be a no.
Yeah, I agree. But I got a really horrible feeling that it's going to be weekly, that they're going to do a Jiminy Glick thing every week. And
then why are they not just calling it the Jiminy Glick variety show, if that's all this is? Wow, you might have just gotten me to delete this week's episode on what? I don't need to.
Yeah, it was bad. It was bad. I will say the one highlight of the first episode of episode one had nothing to do with the regulars, the writers, or anything. It was Savion Glover and the cast of Shuffle Along.
Oh, that was great. Honestly, I thought that the Miley Cyrus performance was good as well. I think that Miley Cyrus is genuinely underrated as a singer/performer because of Miley Cyrus as sensationalist lunatic,
right,
basically. And I thought that her two-song performance, she did a Leonard Cohen cover and an Old Leaper and Stoller song in the first episode, and I thought that she did surprisingly well with both of them.
Mm.
And that those were sort of admirable musical performances that probably weren't mandatory viewing, but on
right.
the other hand, were better than everything around them. Other than, as you say, sure, you put Savion Glover on my TV, I'll watch Savion Glover do his best.
That's exactly. Yeah. Okay. Well, I'm sorry to inform. I was so. I'm so sorry to inform you of the Jiminy Glick thing. I didn't thought maybe you knew.
All I wanted was some indication that there was going to be something that was going to be worth the effort. Because even a bad episode of SNL, in general, allows you to go and find the one good skit, and you can do that. But the first episode, there were all of these SNL people coming back doing basically kind of off-brand things. Like, you have Kate McKinnon on, and she does Ted Cruz's Life? That's the Kate McKinnon performance you
right.
get? No,
right.
Almost as if basically Lorne Michaels said, look, we like Kate McKinnon, we can have her on, but if we don't want to dilute Hillary and all the things that Kate McKinnon does well, so here have this sixth-tier Kate McKinnon impression.
Right.
Enjoy?
Yeah, I guess. Yeah. Well, I've told people to avoid it. All right, I'm interested now. I don't have Cinemax, but I'm interested in Outcast. I know a ton of people who do have Cinemax. This is Robert Kirkman, who, of course, created The Walking Dead. Tell us about Outcast. You reviewed it.
Outcast is yet another show about exorcisms and people being possessed by demons. It's apparently becoming a thing. I think that it has a lot to do with the fact that the Republicans nominated a man who has been possessed by a demon for president. So it's all sorry for bringing politics into your.
That's all right.
Into your realm. No, I think that there is I do think, though, that there is something in the water about demonic possession, and I think, looking frankly on both sides of the aisle, there are evidences that there's something wrong.
Tomorrow I'll be watching The Conjuring 2, so there you go. That's it.
I've heard good things from a couple of people about it.
I have too, but you mentioning possessions, so I
Sure, no, and it's absolutely on the big screen, it's it's a franchise, you know, not just The Conjuring. It feels like there are five or six variations where, you know, little children start speaking in preternaturally hoarse, scary demon voices, and they start contorting themselves. And this is that, too. The first episode, which was the best of the three episodes I saw, does feature a little kid doing all of the various demon contorting things. And there's a priest played by Philip Glenister, who some people might know from the Life on Mars series, the original UK version, not very good American version, but he's playing an American priest, and he comes in and does the whole power of Christ compels you, holding out the cross and all that. And the other sort of part of the exorcism team is Patrick Fugit from the fantastic Almost Famous, who has now grown up to be a full-sized human.
Beard. For people, he's got a beard in this. For people who thought that Patrick Fugit was just like really cute and adorable and awesome in Almost Famous, he was and is. I highly recommend people take a look at Queen of Earth for a completely different Patrick Fugit. Did you see Queen of Earth, Dan?
I did not. is it recommendable other than that?
Or? Elizabeth Moss was my favorite performance last year.
That's right. Yes. I remember you recommending that, and
Fugit Fugit is really creepy in it, like really creepy.
And I think he's very good in this as well. I think this is probably another piece to add to his resume to say I'm a full grown adult and I'm not just Cameron Crowe stand-in from Almost Famous. Not that there's anything wrong with just being that.
Yep.
Because, you know, it's a great performance and a great movie. It's a lot of familiar stuff, and it's a lot of familiar Kirkman stuff, because with both Walking Dead and Fear the Walking Dead, he goes down the whole supernatural things are bad, but what's really scary is what lurks inside the hearts of people stuff, which is, you know, it's pretty common horror trope. If you take away that as a trope, Stephen King wouldn't be allowed to have a career anymore. So, and I want Stephen King to have a career, so he's allowed to continue to do it. It's a little perfunctory, but I liked the premiere. The second, third episodes, I didn't think were as good, and so I'm not sure. Maybe I even saw four. I don't even remember anymore. I watched three or four episodes, and my enthusiasm was waning as I went along. And I know a lot of people liked the first episode, which Cinemax put out early because it's a good episode, as you know, a smart thing to do, build a little buzz. The second episode, the one that's airing on Friday, I almost challenge anyone to tell me anything that happens in the episode. It's 45 minutes of wheel spinning. It is going to have a hard time maintaining the audience based on the second episode, I fear.
Since I don't have Cinemax, what are some of the better Cinemax shows that are produced for Cinemax?
Well, the best of the Cinemax shows by a pretty wide margin was The Nick.
Oh, yeah.
Which was fantastic and had two great seasons that were sort of peak Soderberghy. You know, the man retired but still has managed to do 20 hours of TV.
Right.
Not really retiring. And it hasn't been made clear if that one is coming back or not. A lot of people like Banshee, which is a show that I have just never fully committed to going down its road. It's kind of pulpy and crime and exploitation-y, but done well, and a lot of people really enjoy it.
Yeah, I have friends who love Banshee.
And it's sort of on my list for the next downtime, which will never exist. But it's there.
Yeah.
And then they also had Strike Back, which, as action TV shows go, was extremely proficient, I guess. You know, they did really good things on a fairly limited TV budget and sort of made a fool of a lot of big movies that cost 50, 100 times as much. So Cinemax sort of has maybe steps away from the old Skinemax reputation, and they've done a lot of it with kind of genre fare done honorably, basically. And I think Outcast has that potential. I just don't think it's there yet.
Okay. All right, Dan, hang on.
Sure.
Dan Feinberg is with us, a TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. Follow him on Facebook and Twitter at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. And we're going to take a break, talk more TV, and your questions that you texted in. All coming up right here on 720 WGN. Good morning, everybody. How are you? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. Live in the Allstate Studio, 7th floor of the Trib Tower, overlooking beautiful Michigan Avenue on a Thursday morning. Dan Feinberg is a TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. Follow him on Facebook and Twitter at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. And we welcome Dan back, talking more TV. Welcome back, Dan.
Thank you much, Nick.
All right. So a couple of questions from our listeners.
Bring them on.
Alan says, he's in the 336 area code, any start date for the 24 2.0 reboot?
I believe they're aiming for January for it, and 24 Legacy, I think it's what it's called, which is a little silly, but, you know, they have to make it clear that it's something different because Kiefer Sutherland is now off on ABC with his own show that's going to premiere in the fall, Designated Survivor, which is sure to get a ton of hype, and people are going to be sort of confused when they turn over to 24 Legacy and they see Corey Hawkins from Straight Outta Compton as the lead. But yes, Corey Hawkins from Straight Outta Compton is the lead, playing a war hero who, you know, works for the counterterrorism unit in Los Angeles, and things go. It's actually going to premiere in February after the Super Bowl, which is, you know, a rather good lead out for things as
sure.
Such things go. It's not a launching pad that really has had huge amounts of success, but people try it anyway. And I think realistically, with a show like this that has at least a built-in brand, it'll probably work. And a lot of the people who were responsible for the original show will be back in various capacities. So I feel optimistic. The trailer that they showed at Upfronts a couple weeks back looked and felt enough like 24, and Corey Hawkins looked like he could be a strong and convincing lead. And that's what this show needs, because it needs a guy who you can put a camera on for 24 episodes or, you know, fewer. This is, I believe, a shorter run than the typical 24 season. But, yeah, it needs to be a guy who's basically Kiefer. I mean, Kiefer revitalized his career by reminding people that if you put a camera on him for 24 hours, give or take, it's a pleasant experience.
Right.
So I'm hopeful on 24 Legacy. I'm much more optimistic about this than the Prison Break reboot that Fox is also doing,
yeah,
that I personally have exactly zero use for.
Okay. Talk about Brain Dead on CBS. You briefly mentioned that the last time you were on. Have you seen it since?
I've now seen three episodes of Brain Dead, and
okay,
I am appreciative of any show that wants to give you its review in its title. it's almost begging you to do that, unfortunately. I was joking regarding Outcast that there's something in the water and that people are liking these demonic possession things because they're seeing a lot of demonic possession coming out of people in politics. And this is that in the most literal, on the nose, and only occasionally amusing way possible.
And who's behind this, and what's it all about?
It is from the Kings, the people behind The Good Wife. So this is their transition from one of the most acclaimed network series of the past 10 years. It's an interesting choice, I guess, but this is what they wanted to do. And I've talked to a lot of people who spend a lot of time watching TV and covering TV for a living, who, based on the trailers for this, were unaware that it actually is intentionally a comedy. Like, I've talked to people who are like, God, the trailer makes it look so bad. It's almost like a parody. And my response is, well, it is. That is what this is. It's whether or not you're going to find it funny or not, I can't say. It is intentionally a comedy. It is intentionally a political satire about... There is a meteor that hits the Earth in the Soviet Union, not Soviet Union, Russia, because it's 2016 after all.
Mm-hmm.
Little space bugs crawl out of the meteor and start crawling into people's ears and start changing them. And it turns out that the little space bugs, when they eat your brain, they alter your brain chemistry and you start behaving weirdly. And because it's Washington, people notice slowly, because apparently lots of people behave weirdly in Washington. And that's about the depth of the sophistication that they are going for on this particular show, but it has a lot of people who are very good and very likable. Mary Elizabeth Winstead keeps trying on TV, and she has yet to be the problem in any of the things that she's done. And I think she's likable and charming here. Tony Shalhoub gets to overact a little bit. Who else is in it? Aaron Tveit, who mostly I didn't like in Grease Live, but who is an extremely talented Broadway singer, dancer, and some people, I guess, know him from Graceland as well on USA. He's not all that interesting here. Mostly, my problem with this one is that, you know, it's got this idea, you know, space bugs inhabit people's brains in Washington and they behave weirdly. And then it has no second step. And I've seen three episodes, and already I'm feeling like it's kind of spinning its wheels. And I don't know how I feel about watching 10 more episodes of it doing this, even though I do like watching Mary Elizabeth Winstead in things.
Okay. Well, I just rent 10 Cloverfield Lane, and then everything will be fine.
Or several other things.
Yeah.
She's very good.
I think she's great. Yeah. I think she's great.
Yeah.
All right, Dan, hang on, okay?
Sure.
Dan Feinberg is with us, and we got a break for the news here. We'll come back and talk just a little bit more with Dan, TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. Facebook and Twitter, you follow him at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. We'll come back, talk more TV, and some more of your text questions right here on WGN. Let's take a break. News next. Welcome back, everybody. Good morning. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. It is Triple Play Thursday. So get your requests in right now at 312-981-7200. We have the listeners program the music on our show coming back from bumps and stuff like that. That'll be coming up a little bit later. So get your requests in. One artist, three songs, 312-981-7200 for Triple Play Thursday. We are also going to talk about regionalisms, and we're going to talk about a little quiz here. You know you're from Chicago if you say these things, and then we'll talk about regionalisms as well. That's all coming up. Our phone number is 312-981-7200. You can check us out on Twitter, at Nick D Show. Best way to stay connected is on our Facebook page, interactive, constantly updated. And it's facebook.com/Nick D Show. Let's get back to our conversation. Dan Feinberg is a TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. You can follow him on Facebook and Twitter at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. And we talk to him every couple of weeks on the show. And, Dan, welcome back.
Thank you much.
Okay. Well, let's talk a little bit about Supergirl. Now, I understand that Superman is going to join the show.
Yes, apparently they are. They are dipping into that well, which I don't get at all, frankly, because when the show began, they made a very big point of saying this is not Superman's story.
Yeah,
Supergirl's story, and Superman will be mentioned because he's a part of the universe, but they have different lives. And I thought, okay, that seems about right. You know, give me Supergirl. If she can sustain the show, I don't need Superman. And she can sustain the show, but the CW has decided that part of how they're going to launch it is by bringing in Superman early in the season. It doesn't seem, at least on the surface, as if it's going to be transforming into the Supergirl and Superman show. I think they just want to have Superman as a more functional member of the universe in case they need him. The problem here being that Supergirl is about to enter a CW-DC universe that already includes Arrow, Flash, and Legends of Tomorrow. So it's already a pretty huge and potentially very connected superhero universe that, to my mind, does not need Superman. But we'll see. We'll see if they attempt to stunt cast it or if they basically cast a pretty Vancouver actor who they can afford, because Supergirl is already moving to Vancouver and the budget's going to drop. So it's not like they got the money for, I don't know, whoever's pie in the sky dreams they have. Everyone's like, ooh, Matthew Bomer might be available, and he was once going to play maybe Superman in one of these movies, and then he didn't, and so let's get him to do it now. And I don't think that's what their plan is. So,
okay,
we'll see. I am not enthusiastic about this personally, because I think Supergirl works just fine as it is. But
okay. All right. Now, you know, the last time you were on, you had not watched all of Maria Bamford's terrific show, Lady Dynamite. Have you caught up?
I still haven't. They're keeping other things. There's so much stuff. So so much stuff, Nick. It's horrible. except that some of it's good, but the problem is that it just keeps me from watching things that I know are good.
Yeah.
And so I know that I would love the rest of Lady Dynamite, but no, alas, I have not finished it.
Okay. Well, I recommend when you find time that you should be, if you've got a list, put that one near the top.
It is in my dreams.
Okay.
It's something I do want to get to because I know I will like it, and one of these days I will also finish the second half of the season of Kimmy Schmidt and other various things.
Okay.
Netflix likes TV, except that we're only a couple weeks away from the return of Orange is the New Black, and then I'll have to watch that.
It's crazy. All right, how about this? 847 area code says, does Dan know if Humans is coming back for a second season?
Humans will be back for a second season. I'm trying to think if they have announced when it will be returning to AMC. Humans is another one of those shows that is on my I would like to watch this list because people who I know and respect say that it is fairly smart and well done sci-fi, but it premiered last summer on AMC at a time at which there were too many things, which is to say just about any possible time. So it was never a huge success for AMC, but it also, it's a co-production deal with Channel 4 in the UK, and so only some of the money is coming from AMC, and AMC appreciates that because while Preacher is off to a good start, Feed the Beast did not get off to a good start last week, so it's nice for them to have something that some people like and that doesn't cost them all that much money.
Speaking of AMC, I'm totally on board for Preacher. I'm in, man. I love the first two episodes.
I figured you would be, and it's good. I think it is a well done version of what it's trying to be. I've seen the next two as well, and it holds up. It holds up nicely, and I think it's beginning to kind of cohere a little bit more. I thought the first two episodes were intentionally manic and ragged, and that was what Seth Rogen and Evan Goldberg were going for, but the third and fourth episodes give a better idea of how this functions as a series, and I think it needs to be able to do both, and I was glad to see it could do the things it does.
I'm looking forward to it. I'm glad it still holds up, because I thought the first two were great. And speaking of AMC, what about Feed the Beast with David Schwimmer and Jim Sturgess?
Everything I've heard has been horrible on it, and because my colleague Tim reviewed it, I passed. I have the first episode on my DVR, and someday I will watch it just for the spectacle of it. But I've heard more than a few people make comparisons to Low Winter Sun, and anyone who remembers Low Winter Sun, which is to say almost nobody, knows that that's not a comparison you want to have made. I think there's some sense that when AMC gets into the remaking of foreign formats business, it's not the thing they do best.
Right. And it's on my DVR. It's on my DVR too, and it's not on my priority list, but it's on there.
Yeah, this one's a little bit odd. They really kind of rushed it into production. They had a lot of confidence in certain things about it before they even made a pilot, and it doesn't sound as if most of those things came through in the series. But I'll watch the first episode or two someday just so that I can make fun of it down the road.
Right. Okay. Guilt on Freeform. And Freeform now, what is that channel now?
Freeform is the artist formerly known as ABC Family.
Got it.
Because
okay.
Somebody said ABC Family is too much of a recognizable brand. Let's give it a name that means absolutely nothing, but that is easy to make fun of. And I'm not going to go any further because you may or may not know about large corporations with memorable names changing their names and getting mocked for it in your particular city.
I have no idea what you're talking about, Dan.
is all I was
oh man!
But yes, Freeform. I'm Tronk.
I have no idea what that. I have no idea what Tronk means. No clue what you're talking about.
Nor does anyone else. but yeah, Freeform is the artist formerly known as ABC Family, and they changed the name because they felt like it didn't have any leverage with millennials and whatever the heck that means. And so this is basically their the long-form storytelling version of the Amanda Knox case to some degree. It's about a wealthy American girl over in London. One of her flatmates is murdered. She becomes a suspect, and red herrings ensue. It's an odd show because the best part of it is the performance by Billy Zane, and I just don't know.
Oh, jeez.
See, exactly.
That's not a sentence I expected to come out of your mouth, Dan.
No, and I don't think it's a sentence that anyone would expect to be associated with Freeform/ABC Family. You know, that ABC Family would want to be in the Billy Zane business. But no, Billy Zane has become the basic cable James Spader, and I think that's a good niche for him. And I don't think it's a bad, you know. We need more James Spader. James Spader's entertaining. So he plays the kind of willing to do anything ethically challenged attorney to the Amanda Knox proxy.
Mm-hmm.
And he's having a lot of fun. He's going around all bald and with a fedora and in fancy suits and saying inappropriate things and being all shocking and legal. And everyone else is talking in strange accents and again, red herrings everywhere, red herring, red herring, red herring.
Mm,
and,
okay.
But yes, it's very odd that I'm looking at that one and going, Billy Zane.
All right, Billy Zane. Okay. All right, so you're heading off to the ATX Television Festival, and you'll be, how long are you going to be in Austin at the ATX Fest?
I'm going to be in Austin through Sunday evening.
Okay.
So and
you'll
be, listeners are going to be there. They should come say hi.
Okay. Any listeners out there down in Austin, check out the ATX Television Festival. And of course, you'll be tweeting and writing about it at The Fine Print.
So much tweeting, so much writing, and then I'll have to come back and catch up on all the TV.
Okay, great. Dan, always a pleasure, man. We'll talk to you in a couple of weeks and have a great trip.
Talk to you soon, Nick.
See ya. Bye. Dan Feinberg from The Hollywood Reporter. Check him out on Facebook and Twitter at TheFineprint, F-I-E-N, and check out his coverage of the ATX Television Festival starting today. All right.